Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for our Friday show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We've got two county chief medical officers with us today, Bob Dannenhofer with Douglas County Public Health and Dr. Patrick Ludke with Lane County Public Health. Welcome to both of you.
Glad to be here.
Me too.
So coronavirus cases appear to be going down nationally and statewide. We've had fewer daily deaths as well. Dr. Dannenhofer, let's start with you. What has been happening in Douglas County with case counts? Has there been a similar trend there?
Yes. Thankfully, we've seen a fall from a slight peak that we had after the holidays. But in general, Douglas County has had a very low rate. In fact, for many weeks, we had the lowest rate of any county over 100,000 in the entire country.
And how has the vaccine distribution been going there?
So far, it's been going great. We had a big event last weekend. We're having another big event tomorrow. In addition, we have signed up 42 people in the community who will give vaccines to their patients. So we're hoping that our vaccine distribution system looks pretty much like people's regular source of care.
And Dr. Ludke, how about in Lane County? What is the case count situation like? And then also tell us about vaccine distribution.
I am happy to do so. We have not seen really much of a drop yet. Yesterday, we hit the 9,000 level, and I think longtime listeners know that every roughly 13 days, we have 1,000 new cases in Lane County, and that happened again yesterday, right about, actually exactly on the day we predicted it would happen. I do think, though, looking at the horizon, that we will not hit in 13 days, we will not hit 1,000 cases. I think it's going to be stretched out a bit because it looks like some of the indicators on the horizon are showing a bit of a drop. But it's not going to be a plummet off a cliff. I bet you instead of 13 days for 1,000 cases, it's probably going to be 18 or 19 days. Then in terms of vaccine distribution, since we last talked, last week Friday, we had four large mass vaccination clinics getting 6,000 people in Lane County vaccinated, which is a great thing over the weekend and Monday and Tuesday of this week. And we're visioning more of those going forward. And similar to what Dr. Dannenhofer said, we continue to look for other clinical practices to help us because we really don't want to create a brand new network, a brand new process. Let's use what's already out there. And plenty of practices are vaccinating, so we're still signing up those practices to help us.
So we got lots of listener questions, and I want to jump right in. This one is directed at you, Dr. Dannenhofer. This is from Mark. He emailed us this question. He says, does Douglas County Public Health Network coordinate all COVID immunization clinics? Does DPHN have the resources to do this? And if not, are independent immunizers able to support and schedule their own clinics?
So Douglas County does public health a little different than other counties. Douglas County retains the public health authority, but Douglas Public Health Network coordinates the public health activities in the county. We ourselves don't give any vaccines, but we work with many great clinics in the community that are putting together vaccine events. So if Mark wants to contact me, we'll see if we can get them set up. We think our distributed model works really quite well. Most health departments that give vaccines have one or two central sites. As I said, we have 42 sites scattered around the county.
And he wanted to know, too, if the eligibility tool on the Oregon Health Authority website is the best way to get in line for a vaccine appointment in Douglas County.
Unfortunately, the eligibility tool on the website is very simplistic, and the definitions of who qualifies and when they qualify are really quite complicated. So we'll make those determinations. That is the first step. But for example, it requires the definition of medically fragile, which is something that the website is not qualified to do.
I mean, I think that's really the biggest question we've had from, or the most frequent question we've had from listeners is, kind of, how do I get in line? How do I know when it's my turn? Do either of you want to tackle that?
Well, I'll get that. So the governor has set forth a line of when it's your time. So the group phase 1A, we're now winding through. These 2 weeks have been for educators, early learning, and childcare. And starting on February 8th, it starts for people 80 and above. So if you're in one of those groups, you'll know exactly when it starts. other groups like essential workers or people with underlying conditions have not yet been set. So I don't know when is their time, but I do know the time for the phase 1A, which is up till now, the time for educators this week and next, and the time for those 80 and above starting on February 8th.
Well, I'm going to play a couple voicemails here. These are also from folks in Douglas County. This is from Jackie in Roseburg.
Hi, this is Jackie from Roseburg. Who do we call to line up to appointments for the vaccinations?
So should Jackie call you?
So I will tell her. Depends upon what group she's in. If she's in group 1A, we have an email box, which is vaccines@douglaspublichealthnetwork.org. If they're educators, early learning or childcare, they're supposed to contact their employers. And if they're 80 or above, we would have them wait. We're going to explain the whole process next week.
Okay. Here's another voicemail along similar lines.
Hello, my name is Donna. And my question is, how can we get information in Douglas County about where and when things will be available to us for the vaccinations? We're very concerned. We call one agency, another agency, and we're told to go on and on, recognizing they may not know. We truly need to know how to do this without a panic. And help for those who most need it is very important.
So again, we have a daily press release, which we have been doing since March. All of this information is in there every single day. But if you don't get that, we do a Facebook Live every Tuesday and Friday. We talk about the information then. Or if they're in phase 1A, they should contact us at vaccines@douglaspublichealthnetwork.org. If they're educators, they should talk to their employers. And if they're 80 and above, we would ask them to hold on, and we're going to release the plan next week.
Okay. And some people don't have access to computers on a regular basis. So this is Richard from Yahats with that issue.
My name is Richard Sharpless. I am in Yahats, and I am wondering where and when you get any information on the shots when you don't have a computer, because everything seems to be coming across on a computer, and my computer broke down. How do I get in contact with the ability to get a shot without a computer?
I'd happy to help there. Interesting you have listeners from Yahats, because I think they're actually in Lincoln County.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
But he listens to this radio station, and you know, one of the ways is to listen to radio. And public health is on radio regularly. If he has access to television, we also do our public information messaging. We have two formal events on Tuesdays and Thursdays each week, but then multiple informal events. And he can find information through any of those other sources. It doesn't have to be on a computer. And as we move forward with vaccination of the general community, so non-medical, non-dental, non-behavioral health, et cetera, there will be much more messaging coming out. So stay tuned to each of those venues where you get your information.
Okay. And here we have a long question. I think this kind of reflects people's ongoing challenges. This is from Katie, who emailed us and says, I am in phase 1A group 4, and I can't figure out where to or how to get a vaccine. I'm waiting to get on a non-member waiting list at Kaiser. I've filled out a digital form at the Whiteburg Clinic. I think I am on a wait list at a pharmacy. Also, they've, through their workplace, filled out and submitted a form to Lane County. So I guess, you know, what is a group 4 is in 1A, so definitely eligible at this point. Is that correct?
They're absolutely eligible. And group 1A is a lot of the other healthcare personnel. So the ones that don't fit in group 1, 2, 3. So we have vaccine in Lane County for those persons now. They're prioritized. They're eligible at our mass vaccination clinics. They're eligible through their employer. If you're a healthcare personnel, first check with your employer, and maybe Dr. Dannenhofer has something to say about his county's experience.
So if you're in phase 1A and think you're eligible for a vaccine in Douglas County, please put an email to vaccines@douglaspublichealthnetwork.org, and somebody will get back to you about how to get a vaccine.
Okay. We got an email here from Sylvia, who says, I'm 82 years old. I got the Pfizer vaccine on January 27th. I'm awaiting hip replacement surgery and take Celebrex and Tylenol on alternate mornings for pain. An hour before my shot, I took a Tylenol in addition to the Celebrex, anticipating a long wait in line, which didn't happen. Then I read that pain relievers blunt the immune response, especially in seniors. So how safe will I be after my second dose? Dr. Ludke?
Well, so one of the challenges with having Operation Warp Speed is that these vaccines were brought to market quickly, and some of these subtle questions, these clinical questions, were not answered during that time frame. That being said, we have decades of experience with other vaccines, and we still see strong immunological response from people who have taken a variety of analgesic medications, Tylenol, Motrin, aspirin, etc. So number one, I would not be overly concerned that you're going to have no effect or no protection. Number two, make sure for dose number two that you listen to the recommendations regarding no medications that are not absolutely required. So if you have to take your blood pressure medicine or your blood clotting medicine, please do take those. And also, we, again, still don't know as much as we'd like to know around the potential effect of other vaccinations at the same time. So don't have any vaccines 14 days before or 2 weeks after you get your COVID dose number two, because that hasn't been studied either.
So in that vein, a lot of people have asked if they should still wear masks and social distance after getting the vaccine, and sort of should they be gathering with friends and kind of going back to so-called normal?
I'm happy to start. I really do believe that we all wish that this vaccine, any vaccine for COVID or other conditions, were 100% effective. And of course, that's not the case. These vaccines in their study showed roughly 95% effectiveness for the first two that are on the market. That's not 100%. There's still a risk. If someone has COVID-compatible symptoms, despite getting two doses of vaccine, they could still have COVID, and they should present to be evaluated. And because there's a possibility the vaccine didn't give them the immunity they want, we don't want them to spread COVID to others. So they should still practice the appropriate infection control methods that we've been discussing for some time.
Anything you want to share on that, Dr. Dannenhofer?
Yes. So the vaccine will decrease your risk. So everything is a risk and benefit. And so there are some things that are very risky, like going to a bar without a mask, and other things which are less risky. By getting the vaccine, it reduces your risk probably tenfold, but doesn't reduce it to zero. And since there's no way to know if you're the one who wasn't protected, we're still recommending that people continue to wear masks.
This is the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We're joined by Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with Douglas County Public Health and Lane County Public Health's Dr. Patrick Ludke. So we just left off talking about continuing to wear masks, continuing to practice social distancing, at least for the time being, once people do get vaccinated. What are you thinking about in terms of, we've heard the case numbers for nationally are probably a lot higher than what we know of, and that we may be reaching herd immunity in two ways. One, by people that have recovered from COVID-19, and the other by people getting the vaccine. So when you kind of look into the future, where do you see us being able to, adjust to the point where we can, see our friends, see our families, hug our grandparents, that kind of thing?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard question. I think Bob should take that one.
I'll start with that. So to get to herd immunity depends upon how contagious the virus is. With the original contagiousness of this virus, we thought we had about to be 60 or 70% of the people immune to get there. If there's a more infectious virus, such as the UK variant or the South African variant, we may need higher levels. But let's say it's 60 or 70%. We think in Douglas County, we have diagnosed about 2% of the people with disease, and we probably have missed many. So maybe 6% have had the disease, about another 4% have had vaccine. So we're at 10% now. We still have lots of place to go until we get to herd immunity.
And, we're similar in Lane County. I think the only thing that I would add is that we are going to reach the point where the combination of persons with immunity from infection and the combination of persons with immunity from vaccine will start to make a difference on the ground in terms of the number of new cases. We think that if we continue to get enough vaccine in our pipeline and enough vaccine in people's arms, maybe by late April, we'll see a significant difference due to accumulating immunity, but it will not be herd immunity. We are not going to reach that in April. That's going to be, in the best case scenario, late fall.
We've seen some adjustments on the state level in terms of some of the protocols. We're able to have a certain number of people now going to gyms and movie theaters, which is kind of hard to imagine six people in a movie theater. But why is it that Douglas County and Lane County are at the risk levels that they're at statewide? And do you see that changing in the near future so that we can have a different levels and maybe more options for people?
So in Douglas County and all counties is based upon the number of cases you've had in the last 14 days and what your positivity rate is. So when the positivity rate is above 10% or the case rate is over 200 per 100,000, you're in the extreme range. Mm-hmm. If you're under that, you're in the high range. Douglas County for the last few weeks has squeaked under the 200 per 100,000 range. So our county is in the high range. In that range, you're allowed to open some restaurants and some gyms.
You know, the one area I would maybe highlight as well, and we've seen this internationally, those areas that have been hit really, really hard had a significant population density. So you think about the cities or jurisdictions that had massive disease. It started in Wuhan, a city of over 10 million people, very, very population dense. The Seattle area was the first one in the United States. New York City, of course, was hit really hard. The Lombardia state in northern Italy, very, very dense with the city of Milan there, a second most populous city in Italy. And we have a big metropolitan area here, Eugene-Springfield, the second largest metropolitan area in Oregon. So we have population density issues where people bump into each other a great deal. And although a fair amount of those interactions have been decreased because of these physical distancing measures, some of them still continue. And when we are in the winter months, we have even more of that within the household where we're all breathing the same air in that same airspace. So we're not going to change the metropolitan footprint anytime soon. But as the weather warms up, we'll have less of that in-house transmission, and that will help our numbers as well. But we're a ways to go before we see significant drop-offs in that infectious pressure.
I'm going to play a voicemail now from Sarah asking about vaccine side effects.
Hello, this is Sarah calling from Leeburg, and I want to ask about the prevalence of severe reactions to the COVID vaccine. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I volunteered for two trials, but I just wonder what the prevalence is and if it's more on the basis of individuals or whether there's an association with batches. And also, what do you define as a severe reaction? What's the spectrum? Is it a fever above a certain amount, or exactly what does that mean?
Bob, I think you have the data right on the tip of your tongue. Why don't you start with that one?
I do. So both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine have been associated with anaphylactic reactions. That's an acute allergic reaction, like people might get after a bee sting or after eating shellfish if they're allergic. Initially, the thought was that it was about 1 in 10,000, but the data that came out yesterday suggests it's less common than that, about 1 in probably 100,000 at the worst. So not very common, but quite severe when you would get it. So we certainly are asking that people get vaccines at a site, or if you did have one of those reactions, they could treat you with epinephrine. Other reactions like fever, soreness, and whatever are actually fairly common with this vaccine. About a few percent of the people who get this feel ill enough that they don't want to go to work the next day. We've certainly seen some fevers, some muscle aches, and we say that that means the vaccine is working.
And I would only add that the report that Bob mentioned was in many ways heartening. You're always nervous when you do phase one, phase two, phase three trials looking at safety and efficacy because you're not doing a trial of 10 million people. That's just too expensive and logistically really impossible. So you do these trials on 5, 10, 20, 30,000 people, and you wonder then, when we go out and vaccinate millions, will we see that one in a million response and how frequently? And the initial reports from the phase 1, 2, and 3 trials showed us that the side effects were likely very similar to vaccines we already have on the market. And the report from the Center for Disease Control yesterday showed that that is indeed true after we vaccinated 10 million plus Americans. So it's very heartening to each of us that those early signals in the data were indeed borne out once we started to vaccinate many, many more people.
Here's a question we got from the email. This is from Craig. After recovering from COVID, how should people return to exercise? What signs should you look for as you start to ease back into cardio and strength training?
I'm happy to start with that. You know, 4 out of 5 of us, or roughly 80%, who are infected with COVID, we end up with either asymptomatic disease or mildly symptomatic disease. So for any of those persons, there's really no reason for you to have any restrictions. Go back to what you were doing. Now, for people with more severe disease, let's say that they were one of those persons in the 20%, and they may have had significant damage to their lungs or even to their heart. There are some reports showing that this virus can be directly cardiotoxic. So they will need to be more careful, and they should speak with, if they're hospitalized, their physicians in the hospital, and after they're discharged, they should speak with their primary care doc to work out the best way forward.
Here's one more quick question. We have time for just one more. Someone is asking, with the new COVID variant now in the state, why are face shields still allowed as a substitute for cloth masks? Or are they?
Well, they're not recommended. Bob, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, they're clearly not recommended. Clearly, with the more infectious variants around, we want people to redouble their efforts to mask. The best would be people now who aren't wearing a mask to start wearing any kind of mask and to wear a better efficiency mask. There are a rare number of people who really can't wear a mask. Perhaps people were the victims of domestic violence and got smothered or choked. For them to wear a mask is sometimes really psychologically difficult. And for those rare people or some people with breathing problems, a face shield is certainly better than nothing. But for the great majority of us who don't fit into one of those very special groups, we should wear a well-fitting mask at any time we're in public.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining us on KLCC's Friday show. Dr. Patrick Lidke is Lane County Public Health Officer, and Dr. Bob Dannenhofer is Douglas County Public Health Officer. And if you have more questions for Dr. Dannenhofer, hop on over to Facebook. He has a regular 4 o'clock session at the Douglas Public Health Network page. Thanks so much, guys. We had production help from Angela Kellner and Jason Brown. I'm Rachel McDonald. Enjoy your weekend.